Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT, a weekly conversation with people who are shaping the technology landscape. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Everpedia Chief Executive Officer Theodore Forselius and Chief Information Officer Larry Sanger to the broadcast. Everpedia is a wiki-based online encyclopedia that is the largest in the English language. Everpedia leverages blockchain technology to provide incentives for content generation and to ensure a democratized access to information. Theodore co-founded Everpedia in 2014, and prior to that, he was a creator of social gaming networks Hello and Mobify, and was a web developer at Swedish advertising agency Noga. Larry is the CIO of Everpedia and has been focused on developing Everpedia's blockchain network since joining full-time in December of 2016. Larry co-founded Wikipedia with Jimmy Wales in 2001. Larry also taught philosophy at Ohio State University as a visiting professor, and he received a Bachelor of Arts degree in philosophy from Reed College and a PhD in philosophy from Ohio State University. I recently caught up with Theodore and Larry by phone in their office in Los Angeles, California, and our conversation covered the genesis of and vision for Everpedia, the company's unique use of blockchain and the value it provides, the key differences between Everpedia and Wikipedia, and a variety of other topics. If you like what you hear, we'd be grateful if you could give us a ratings on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. Thank you. The Forum on World-Class IT is brought to you by TopTal, an exclusive network of the top freelance software developers, designers, and finance experts in the world. I recently caught up with TopTal CEO Tasso Duval, and he offered the following top five trends for hiring top talent.
The top five trends for hiring top talent are, one, hiring talent remotely, ensuring that they are able to work remotely and that companies are hiring talent remotely. Two, leveraging teams in different dispersed locations. If you're hiring in-house and you're leveraging remotely a bit, being open to having talent even in the same time zone is an important factor that we've noticed. Three, highly skilled teams becoming the majority rather than the lead, meaning ensuring that the team composition comprises of predominantly high-skilled labor rather than high-skilled labor supported by lower-skilled labor. Four, infrastructure being created to support those teams, ensuring that the teams in-house are connected with the remote teams that are working together. And five, flexibility with offer packages. We've seen that even the in-house talent that are joining companies from Google to Facebook and on are interested in demanding that there is a remote component to their job, whether it's one day a week or full time, be included within their offer packages.
Welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT. I'm joined today by Theodore Forselius, the Chief Executive Officer of Everpedia, and Larry Sanger, the company's Chief Information Officer. Welcome to you both, gentlemen.
Hey, thank you, Peter. Great to be here.
No, it's a pleasure. Theodore, maybe we'll begin with you, if you don't mind. I thought we would talk a bit about the genesis of Everpedia, as well as maybe an appropriate starting point would be an overview, in your words, of the business model and the company's mission.
Yeah, sure. So Everpedia actually started a little over 2 years ago, just as a project between me and my co-founder, Sam Kassemian, while he was still studying at UCLA. And originally, we just wanted to build a more modern and inclusive version of Wikipedia, because we were actually both editors and huge fans of Wikipedia. But we felt like there was a lot of things that was kind of outdated that we could do better. Things like their editing interface, talk pages for discussing citations, their community guidelines and policies, and more things like that. So we kind of started Everpedia as a project to improve on those things. And kind of since then, we've grown to a little over 3 million unique monthly users and about 6 million encyclopedia articles, which is actually 1 million more than English Wikipedia, because we actually started off by forking English Wikipedia. And that actually makes us the largest encyclopedia, English encyclopedia in the world right now by content. So the reason why we decided to kind of go the route of blockchain and implement blockchain technology in our opinion, was because we were a for-profit startup, not a nonprofit like Wikipedia, so we had to find some way to monetize. And so originally, we actually partnered with companies, so we started running ads on the site. But we didn't really feel like that was, you know, it felt weird saying that we were better than Wikipedia while we were running ads. So we started looking at other kind of venues on monetization, and we looked at Wikipedia, and they have massive, you know, donation banners, which didn't feel that much better in our opinion. And so my co-founder Sam, he came up with the idea of, what if we just tokenize the entire knowledge base and decentralize it? And that way, you know, there is no like central entity that actually needs, you know, to run ads or anything like that to be able to monetize, because the whole system will be completely peer to peer. And so that's kind of why we decided to go that route.
Larry Sanger, turning to you, you joined the company as the chief information officer. You are a co-founder of Wikipedia, and I'd be interested in your thoughts about the differences between the two businesses.
Well, what happened was the presidents of the company contacted me, and I won't give the whole story, but basically told me that Everpedia was moving to the blockchain, so that would be one of the big differences. To make a long story short, I got very interested because the blockchain enables something that I have been wanting to do for a long time. But let's talk about the differences between Everpedia and Wikipedia then. The biggest difference from a policy standpoint is that Everpedia doesn't have any sort of a policy that restricts topics. So Wikipedia allows only topics that are sufficiently notable. There have to be plenty of what Wikipedia considers to be credible sources. And there also isn't any way for people who are identified by staff as being one of the sources of the information. For example, the person who an article is about, there isn't any way for those people to be used as sources. So Everpedia actually has a way for that to happen. So when you open up the topic, it really changes the nature of the project, as it turns out. That's one big difference. The other really big difference that is coming online right now is that Everpedia is moving to the blockchain. And what this means is that we will have pointers to all of the content on Everpedia from a blockchain to something called IPFS, the Interplanetary File System, as it's called, which basically it's kind of like peer-to-peer file sharing, but it's more sophisticated than that. And what this is going to allow is, among many other things, it will allow users to be compensated and to actually take ownership, to actually be able to quantify the amount of governance they have, depending on how much work they've put into it. I think those are the two really big differences.
Yeah.
There's a lot of other little things.
Those are two substantial ones, certainly. And I'd be interested, so the fact that you, some of the first set of differences you mentioned in terms of, for example, someone being able to be a source for their own page, and some of mm-hmm. the differences in the ways in which the Everpedia content is edited, obviously runs contrary to some of the philosophies that you had baked into Wikipedia to begin with. And I'd be curious how your learnings through the experience of Wikipedia has led you to the extent to which I can assume that you agree with the stances taken by Everpedia, the advantages of some of those changes relative to maybe some of the philosophical points that were in your mind at the outset of Wikipedia?
Well, you know, when I first started talking to the guys about Everpedia, which was just after they got started, so about 2 years ago, I was a little skeptical of the whole idea of opening up the topics to absolutely anything. But the more that I've worked in the system, the more impressed I've become. It really opens up and motivates people to participate in a way that just doesn't happen on Wikipedia anymore. And I think that's extremely important to, I'm actually the guy who wrote the ignore all rules rule for Wikipedia. Yeah. That might surprise you if you know anything about my history with Wikipedia. Some people think that because I started Citizendium back in 2006, which was another wiki encyclopedia, which was a competitor of Wikipedia, and it made a special role for expert editors. The common impression is that I'm all about, you know, making sure that information is checked before it's posted and that only experts are involved. Those were never my views, ever. I just think, and I continue to think, that the quality of information is extremely important, but there's a lot of other things that need to be happening. One of the things that needs to be happening for a really successful encyclopedia is, well, there needs to be a lot more people need to feel empowered to get involved. Right now, Wikipedia has just something like 10,000 voting editors, people who have edited enough that they can vote in elections, basically. 10,000 people out of, you know, hundreds of millions, if not billions, of regular users, right? Isn't that a missed opportunity? Is my question. Right? It seems to me that we could be engaging a lot more people.
I'm also curious how I've read that Everpedia has more English language articles than Wikipedia already, and I'm curious how has that happened? Just given the amount of content as well as just the duration of that business, how has Everpedia had the opportunity to expand so rapidly?
Well, that's it's not really as hard as it sounds, because we've built on the shoulders of Wikipedia. So we have been building and updating articles from Wikipedia, and that's 5 million articles. But then our staff have added a lot of articles in various ways. There's a lot of handwritten articles, which we are constantly, you know, putting out there. But also a huge number of articles written by volunteers, and the volunteer community is really heating up since we started talking publicly about the blockchain in December. There's a number of different sources, basically.
You mentioned that although you've been involved in the business for a couple of years, you joined officially only late last year. One of the reasons why you were so excited, in fact, was the use of blockchain. Can you talk about, first and foremost, why that was such an exciting development for you, the progress made then, and then perhaps we can cover after that the value you expect to derive from using it.
Sure. Well, I'll just talk about the first one. Basically, I got involved initially, I just happened to know Mahmoud, who is one of the co-founders, and he was trying to get me involved. And it was actually around the same time, maybe a little earlier, 2014, 2015, I had this idea that solved a problem that I'd been wrestling with regard to online encyclopedias for 15 years. And the problem is basically, how do you motivate boatloads of people to work all on the same project and to get them working side by side with experts? How do you motivate the experts to get involved? If there were one or perhaps a few competing websites that cataloged knowledge in a really credible way, then we would see a lot more participation. And in addition, I just think that we could do so much better in terms of the quality of articles. Wikipedia articles are frequently outdated now, and it's becoming more and more difficult for people to participate, because basically the regulars tend to scare the new people off in various ways. So basically, I have the idea that what we need to do is create a clearinghouse of encyclopedia articles. What I would like to see is a page with, for example, all the articles about Descartes on it, the French philosopher. And I can imagine there was probably a good dozen encyclopedia articles available. Some of them might be behind paywalls. But I can imagine that if people were properly motivated, we could have a bunch of ratings of those articles, and then the top rated article could be relied upon as a really good source of information about the topic. And wouldn't it be awesome then if that sort of thing existed? Then people could be they could directly link to new articles which they host anywhere. It could be truly decentralized. Now, I actually pitched this idea to the guys because I didn't have anyone to work on it, and I really wanted to work with some people, and I basically they were really hard at work just building the basic infrastructure of the site. And so we sort of went our separate ways. And then last September, as I was saying, Sam contacted me and said, we were thinking of putting Everpedia on the blockchain. And I had sort of followed blockchain stuff, but not that much. I knew it was something that I liked, and I knew it was something I should probably look into more, but I never did. But once he explained what was going on, I could immediately see how this technology can basically implement the idea that I had. And moreover, the guys were enthusiastically on board with implementing the idea. So the first step, which Sam and Travis and Kadar, these are the three lead developers, what they're working on now is basically putting the content of Everpedia on the blockchain. And so that's really exciting, because it entails putting all of Everpedia, the English language Wikipedia, on the blockchain, which means people can start working on Everpedia articles and actually be compensated for doing so. And people complain about cryptocurrencies being based on nothing. But this, the contents of Wikipedia and Everpedia are not nothing. it's actually a very credible source of value, credible as a source of value, I should say.
Well, Theodore Forselius, can you take a moment to talk a bit about the use also of cryptocurrency? You've developed a cryptocurrency token called IQ, and I'd be interested in the, a lot of people who think of cryptocurrency think of Bitcoin or others. Can you describe IQ, how it differs from perhaps more popular versions of cryptocurrency and the utility that it provides?
Sure, yeah. So the way the IQ tokens work is that when you edit the site, when you create content, you actually earn these IQ tokens for helping to contribute to the knowledge base. And these tokens, they represent votes in the actual knowledge base. They give you the utility they give is governance. And so the more tokens you earn, the more good content you put up, the more tokens you have, and the more voting power you get in the system. And so the way the kind of token mechanism works when you edit articles is that you actually have to stake a small amount of tokens to propose an edit on the site. And then other editors have to approve the edit in order for you to get your stake tokens back. And then you get some more as a reward. But if the rest of the community actually dismiss your proposed edit, then the tokens that you staked actually get burnt. And so this is one of the really exciting things enabled by blockchain technology that helps us kind of use financial incentives as, you know, an automatic quality mechanism for kind of controlling what content gets added to a knowledge base and what does not, which is really exciting to us.
Excellent. And I wanted to also ask you how you see Everpedia democratizing information in countries that have historically censored it. Some of what I've read is that part of your vision actually is to make the information more accessible, perhaps than prior attempts have been, partially through the use of the technology we've been describing. Can you provide kind of an overview of that?
Yeah, sure. So we're actually using something called the IPFS protocol. I don't know if you've heard about it. It's called the Interplanetary File System. So what that allows us to do is actually allow the community to collectively host the site on nodes and the information instead of on centralized servers. And so what's really revolutionary about this is that there's no central hosting cost for us as a company, which means that, you know, if the Everpedia team, disappeared or went bankrupt or something tomorrow, all the information that all these people had, you know, contributed will continue to live on peer to peer on the knowledge base through these IPFS nodes. And another really exciting kind of side effect of doing that is that that makes it incredibly difficult for foreign regimes to actually censor the information as well, since there's no central server, you know, central IP that they can block for people accessing this information, because it's completely stored peer-to-peer, just like, you know, Bitcoin or BitTorrent and other examples.
Understood. Larry, I heard a quote from you, or read a quote from you, which was, in an era of misinformation, the world stands to benefit enormously from transparent, immutable, and decentralized protocol for accessing and sharing knowledge. So it sounds like the description that Theodore just mentioned is something that is of particular excitement to you as well.
Absolutely. I think it's extremely important that it be decentralized. As I was saying before, actually, essentially, if you can contribute to the same knowledge database from a bunch of different sources, and then what that means is that somebody who wants to participate in the knowledge marketplace doesn't have to use Wikipedia. They can use any source that is connected to the what will be called the Everpedia network, and that actually makes a huge difference, because basically if you had a chance to author the top ranked article, the top result on Google, and you wouldn't just assume that it would be Wikipedia if Wikipedia has an article about it, which has articles about a lot of things, doesn't it? Then you would be much more likely to participate I think because Wikipedia sort of has all of this mindshare and they are just one website, it basically cuts off the possibility and the motivation of other people to participate in cataloging the world's knowledge. And by decentralizing the means whereby knowledge is collected, not having it, you know, one domain, Wikipedia.org, and one set of servers, but instead just spread all across the internet like an independent protocol, independent of any one node. Well, that problem is solved, and that's going to make a huge difference.
Indeed. Larry, I also wanted to ask you, there are so many companies now that are weighing whether to leverage blockchain, certainly very prominently in the financial services space, for example, but now actually across a variety of industries. And it's interesting to hear pontificators, everyone from practitioners to investors in fintech, who have differing opinions as to its efficacy, its applicability across businesses and so on. And now as somebody who's immersed in it, I wonder what lessons you draw as to the broader implications, the broader value that enterprises can derive from leveraging blockchain technology.
Well, I would say that blockchain is the kind of thing that if it works the way that the true believers today in 2018 think it will, then huge swaths of the economy are going to be moving onto the blockchain. And the reason for that is actually exactly the same as what we were just talking about. Decentralization and the fact that it's all open and cannot be changed, what's called immutability. The essential features of blockchain technology enable a new kind of economic system, really. For those who haven't studied it, I recommend that they do so. It will blow your mind. It blew mine. So I have become a bit of a true believer. I can't be too much of a true believer because I remain sort of philosophically a skeptic, so I'll believe it when I see it, but I can't think of any reason why this isn't going to happen. Like, I'm not at all worried, for example, that the crypto prices have dropped recently. It's like, I don't care, that's basically, as far as I can tell, just a lot of profit taking. The fundamentals are very solid. And again, why don't you go ahead, Ted? You've thought a lot about this as well.
No, I was just going to say that, just like Larry was saying, I think there's way too much focus in the space right now on, you know, the price of Bitcoin, the price of Ethereum, and you know, like Bitcoin is going to crash, Bitcoin is going to go to new highs, and all these kinds of headlines. And there's way too little focus on kind of the revolutionary aspects of blockchain technology and, you know, how the decentralization of the internet is going to create a whole new era of kind of financial inclusion in places where, you know, people didn't have access to being able to, you know, be a part of these kinds of you know, companies and platforms before, and, you know, being part of the technology revolution. And so I think that's really, really exciting. And, you know, Wikipedia is just one example out of many that I'm sure we'll see over the next couple of years as this technology keeps improving and keeps progressing.
Theodore, as you think about the next few years, where do you see Wikipedia developing? What's your vision for the next 5 years, say, in the development of the company? Where do you hope it to be?
Well, I hope that the Wikipedia network will, you know, obviously become the de facto kind of decentralized knowledge base, peer-to-peer knowledge base on the internet that, like Larry was saying, any kind of platform or application can tap into and kind of utilize. And I think, you know, in kind of this era of misinformation and fake news and a general distrust in centralized entities like governments and the media and corporations and stuff like that, I think that the need for a, you know, decentralized and transparent and immutable knowledge base is kind of more relevant than ever before in history. And so I hope that we can kind of help create that over the next couple of years.
And what may I ask also, what is the pathway to gaining more of mind share of would-be users and developing your brand further? Obviously, you're going up against one of the, you know, most known of the brands on the internet. So what's the pathway to taking away mind share, taking away market share ultimately?
Well, I think creating a completely open source protocol that's peer-to-peer is a great value proposition for a lot of people. And not to mention the financial incentives of, you know, actually being able to become a stakeholder of the knowledge base that you're contributing to and earning back real financial value, you know, that you create. Because with kind of traditional models that companies like Facebook or nonprofits like Wikipedia use, you know, there's millions or even billions of users creating all of this value every day. And then there's one entity kind of traditionally that extracts all of that value. And so what tokenizing a platform like that does is that it helps align the incentives of the value creators and the value extractors through these tokens, so that all the value that these users create comes directly back to them. And I think that's a massive value proposition, especially, you know, for people in developing countries where Wikipedia have really large, you know, user bases, like in India, for example. Especially, you know, with Everpedia, considering we already have all of Wikipedia on Everpedia. So contributing to our protocol will kind of, for me, be a no-brainer, I think, for a lot of people.
Let me jump in here. There's so many different things that would motivate someone to participate in Everpedia rather than Wikipedia. It's basically the story just needs to be told. Essentially, Everpedia features, I think, a younger and more hip sort of crowd contributing to it. It's a lot easier to contribute to because it has a WYSIWYG editing interface. So the Everpedia programmers, in the space of a few months, actually produced what Wikipedia's engineers couldn't produce in after years of trying, namely a really usable WYSIWYG editorial interface. So I think Everpedia is it's also going to be a lot easier to change and improve. If you want to change the way that the community is governed, the tokens that you hold by working for the project will give you voting rights to do that. And well, just another thing is you'll be able to submit competing articles. Either via Everpedia.org or various other websites. And that in itself, I think, is going to attract some people who basically feel like their work is not sufficiently respected by Wikipedia. And, you know, Google's Knoll project, so it's spelled K-N-O-L. I don't know if you remember that, but they actually tried something similar, but it was Google. And if you were writing for Knoll, you were writing for Google. This is very different. Here, what we're going to be doing is enabling people to write and compete to write the very best articles on all kinds of different subjects. And think of this. Imagine all of the articles on Everpedia, the Everpedia network, being rated. Imagine all the articles in Wikipedia and Britannica and any number of other sources, academic and popular. They all have ratings, and In addition, we have information because people offer it to the network about the raters. So I would be able to say that I have a PhD in philosophy and I'm male and I live in Ohio and I'm an American and so forth. I get to talk about my religion, my politics, my, you know, civic associations, professional associations and certificates, who knows, all of that information. And then you think, well, that's just a lot of information about people. What does that matter? Well, what it matters is once you've got the ratings of the articles, then you can slice and dice that rating information. You can say, what are the best articles according to the Democrats versus the Republicans? What are the best articles according to men versus women? How about like Americans versus French people and so forth? If this is truly decentralized, this will be the first time where people actually have the motive, I think, to participate in something like that, because the ratings are not going to be controlled centrally by anyone. All right. And then anyone would be able to use that information. Anyone would be able to make an app, and Everpedia certainly will be making some features to support this, where we say, you know, the best article according to the experts or according to everyone or whatever, the best article will be the one that's shown first. And if somebody wants to create a better Conservapedia or Liberapedia, they'll be able to do that. And it won't suck, unlike Conservapedia, which really does suck. I mean, it's just awful. But what if you had the best encyclopedia articles from a conservative point of view all gathered in one place, or from a liberal point of view? You'd be able to compare points of view a lot more easily. I think it's potentially decentralizing information like this and allowing everyone to identify information about themselves and rate articles. All of that together will create a system where people can learn about each other's views. And that could be really important it's kind of what I think we need. We need to understand where other people are coming from. So anyway.
That's very interesting. So you actually, it would strike me that at least on the face of it, that people would perhaps search for those things that they're most interested in, maybe in some ways sort of augmenting the echo chamber that exists in so many places. But you're suggesting that perhaps this is the way in which liberals get to know conservatives and vice versa, or people of different religions begin to have a greater common understanding of differences and embrace those, et cetera.
Yeah, I think, well, just think of it like this. You have, let's say we're really confused about how people, how Muslims around the world really think about Sharia law. Or for that matter, about jihad. There's been a lot of debate about this, hasn't there? Well, this system would give you a way to actually read and find out. And it wouldn't be filtered through media sources or experts or whatever. You can look at the expert views in aggregate. Not any one particular favored experts, but all the experts. And you can look at the views according to the people who live in Saudi Arabia. Imagine the top rated article about jihad according to Saudis written in English. That would be really interesting. You could learn so much from that.
Indeed.
That sort of thing never has existed before. It should exist.
Well, we'll make that the last word. I certainly appreciate
Both of you, Theodore Forselius and Larry Sanger, taking some time with me today on the forum on World Class IT. It's been great to speak with you both.
Yeah, thank you so much, Peter.
Thanks for listening to the Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please rate us on iTunes or through whatever other source you use for podcasts. And please join me next week when my guests will be Denis Robitaille, the CIO of the World Bank Group, and Gil Haas, the SVP Retail and Direct Bank CIO at Capital One. You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call MetaStrategy's Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to MetaStrategy's five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.